We've done the Jesus of history and the Jesus of prophecy, but who is the Jesus of reality? Well, let's talk about it. Trigger warning, this is Caffeinated Christianity. Well, it's December 20, let me check my watch, 6th, and we are obviously, you know, one day removed from Christmas, in case you forgot, it was on the 25th, and pretty solid year this year. Got to see everybody, and, you know, Christmas is always a good time. I always eat like a champ, and I added some much needed clothing items to my wardrobe, so I look like less of a bum when I walk around a college campus now. So now I look like I'm sophisticated, and it's a good time. It's a good feeling. Welcome to the next episode of Caffeinated Christianity, where the coffee is black and the opinions that are my own are unqualified. So far, what we've done, because we are in episode 5 of the Jesus series, what we have covered so far is part 1 was the intro, which I didn't really say that much in that episode. Part 2 was the preface, which is where we talked about the credibility of the Bible, and why we're going to use it as a source and claim it to be a historically accurate source. Part 3 was about the historical Jesus. Who is Jesus of history? Is there contemporary evidence that Jesus was a real person? Part 4 is about the Jesus of Old Testament prophecy and how that was fulfilled in his life in the New Testament. And so part 5 is going to be about the practical Jesus. What would Jesus look like if we could see him right now? Your verse of the episode, Luke 6:36, "But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked." So let's dive into this. Today we're going to be talking about, practically speaking, who is Jesus, right? If we had Jesus with us, beside us, if we were able to put ourselves in the Gospels as a third party, what would we see? Well, the Old Testament gives us lots of things that the Messiah is supposed to look like, and the problem you run into with the Old Testament is a lot of them are either ambiguous or they are very lofty in their approach. An example I can think of would be Isaiah chapter 9, when it talks about, you know, a son will be born for us, and it calls him Mighty Counselor, or Mighty God, Wonderful Counselor, Prince of Peace, and those are all good and well, and in retrospect, we can turn around and apply those to Jesus, because now, in 2018, we know who it's talking about, but at the time, it was sort of ambiguous as to who they were necessarily referring to. Prophecy tells us kind of who Jesus is, but the problem is they never really use his name, and they're really only referencing the Messiah. We know Jesus to be the Messiah, but if you're looking at it purely from an Old Testament lens, you can't necessarily say that Jesus unequivocally is going to match these things, seeing as they had never met or seen him before to begin with. A lot of churches will tell you that Jesus is all of these, you know, different titles. A lot of them are not incorrect. It's just often we get an incomplete picture of Jesus. You know, some people will say, well, Jesus is Lord. Yes, I agree. Well, Jesus is God's son. Well, yes, I agree. Well, Jesus was wise. Yes, I agree. Jesus is the great healer. Yes, I agree. But Jesus is also wrathful. Jesus also got mad. Jesus was also human. Jesus wore sandals. Jesus probably got hungry. Jesus got tired. Jesus had a beard, more than likely, given the context in which he was born. Jesus was Jewish. We're going to talk about that. If we had him sitting right here, what would we probably think? Well, the first thing we would probably think is that Jesus is normal. He was born to a normal woman, Mary. There's nothing inherently amazing about Mary other than that she was chosen by God to carry his child. Mary had no prereqs that qualified her to be the mother of Jesus other than that she was just there. She got picked. There was a big perception, we know by the Dead Sea Scrolls, that around the first century, a lot of women and a lot of people thought the Messiah was due to come at any moment now. So the fact that Mary got picked is amazing for her, but it's not necessarily inherently for any particular reason other than that she just got picked, mostly because, well, just because out of God's sovereign choice, he chose Mary. Jesus' family was normal. He had Mary and Joseph. Joseph was a carpenter. Jesus had siblings. Jesus is from a small town in Judea called Nazareth, and Jesus is what's called a Nazarite. John the Baptist is also a Nazarite. What it means to be a Nazarite is that for a period of your life, you pledged to be abstinent from alcohol, and you pledged to be single for the rest of your life, and you would often not cut your hair or shave. And so that's why we often think Jesus had long hair and a beard, because Jesus was a Nazarite. John the Baptist was the same way. That's why when he's coming prophesying at the Jordan River, he looks very disheveled, because, well, he's a Nazarite. Jesus had siblings. Jesus was ethnically Jewish, and we know this because of the context and that he was born, and we can trace his lineage back. Given what we've got in the New Testament, we can prove that Jesus is, in fact, ethnically Jewish. But really, who is he? Like, in reality, like, what would we see if we were actually there at the time? What are some things that we would come to the conclusion of? Well, I think there are three major conclusions that we would come to if we were someone basically following Jesus around at the time. Practically, this is what I think we would recognize about Jesus. The first thing we would recognize is that Jesus is the great healer. How many times in the New Testament does Jesus fix something that someone has wrong with them physically or mentally or spiritually, emotionally, whatever? You know, he heals the centurion's servant, Luke chapter 8. He heals the man with leprosy, Luke chapter 5. And the reason I love that story is because by Old Testament law, in order for you to be deemed clean enough to enter back into the city, the priest has to look at you and decide whether or not you are clean. For you to touch someone with leprosy deems you unclean. And what's amazing is that the man comes up and is like, Jesus, if it is your will, please heal me. And Jesus is like, absolutely, I'll heal you because of your great faith. And Jesus touches him. So what happens is Jesus takes on this man's iniquity for himself, heals the man of his iniquity. And now Jesus can technically not enter the city because he is, quote unquote, unclean. That's amazing. That's what Jesus did for us on the cross. Jesus heals the demon-possessed man in Mark, probably my favorite story in the entire four Gospels. That's where he casts the demons into the pigs and they run off the cliff. Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead, John chapter 11. And Jesus heals the paralytic on the mat, Luke chapter 5. That's when the guys lower the paralytic down through the ceiling, I believe, and they dig a hole out in the ceiling and they lower the man down, and Jesus heals the man. He tells him to get up and walk. Something we would see if we were to follow Jesus around in the first century is that Jesus is the great healer. That's something we would notice. The second thing we would notice, were we to follow Jesus around in the first century, is that Jesus is more powerful than anything else, especially forces of nature. In Matthew chapter 8, there's a huge storm while these guys are on the boat, and Jesus just comes out from sleeping. He was sleeping through this storm. He comes out and he's like, guys, don't worry about it. And Jesus calms the storm. Jesus has power over the weather. I just gave you several examples of how Jesus heals many diseases and raises someone from the dead. In Luke chapter 8, we see Jesus exorcise a man. That's the same story, demon-possessed man. Jesus exorcises demons out of a man. Jesus has power over demons. In Luke chapter 4, we see that Jesus denies temptation by Satan, which is something that we fail at every day. So Jesus, though he was fully human, was fully able to swerve on sinful temptation. Jesus has power over Satan's temptation. In John chapter 6, Jesus feeds 5,000 people with a very, very meager amount of food. Jesus has power over material items. Jesus is more powerful than anything we could think of. Jesus is more powerful than nature. He's more powerful than disease. He's more powerful than lack of resources. He's more powerful even than Satan, who caused Adam and Eve to eat what I stand by is probably an apple. That's just a joke. It's probably a red apple, because red apples are terrible. They served us those when I was in school, and they're awful. Jesus even has power over the one who caused humanity to fall. Jesus has power over everything. We would see that Jesus is the great healer, and we would see that Jesus is more powerful than anything we can think of. The third thing we would notice about Jesus is that Jesus is all-knowing. Jesus is omniscient. In John chapter 4, Jesus runs into a woman at the well, and she's a Samaritan woman first off, so there's a huge ethnic divide there. Jesus should not be talking to this woman because she is a Samaritan, and he is a Jew, and that's just not something that you do. He talks to this woman about basically the fact that she has had multiple husbands and the one she is with now is not her husband. Jesus doesn't know this woman. We don't get her name. There's no reason for him to know this information other than the fact that he is all-knowing and he knows and sees everything. In John chapter 8, the Pharisees bring a woman to Jesus and they're like, we want you to stone this woman for she is sinful. And so Jesus, what he begins to do is he bends down on the ground and begins to, what the Bible says, write in the dirt. There's a lot of theories on what Jesus is doing there. My personal theory is that Jesus is starting to write out the sins of the various Pharisees that are there accusing this woman. Because what they immediately do after Jesus begins to write in the dirt is they start to backpedal. And what Jesus says is he gets up and he says, for any one of you who is perfect, cast the first stone. And his point is, if you are without sin, you're allowed to judge this woman. But since you are not without sin, you should not be judging this woman. The people dropped their stones, they took their ball, and they went home. Jesus is all-knowing. Jesus repeatedly, there we go again. I have a mess up in every single episode. Jesus repeatedly references his own crucifixion and betrayal multiple times. Because when it all goes down and after Jesus ascends, everybody's kind of like, oh my gosh, Jesus was right. Jesus was going to get persecuted and killed, and then he was going to come back. Like, this all makes sense because he's been saying this forever. Jesus repeatedly references his own crucifixion and betrayal. More specifically, John chapter 13, after Jesus washes the disciples' feet, Jesus predicts his betrayal by somebody in the room, which we know now to be Judas. Jesus predicts his betrayal by one of the disciples because they're all in the room together. If we were to spend time with Jesus in the first century, I think the three biggest things we would notice is that Jesus can heal anything, Jesus has power over anything, and Jesus knows everything. It wouldn't take a rocket scientist or some kind of stretch of the imagination to see that if you were in historical context with these people, you would see all of these things happening. Just as a quick, you know, maybe additive, I just kind of thought of this. You know, the fourth thing I think we would notice is that Jesus doesn't judge. And the reason I say that is because for some reason in my mind just now popped in the thought of Matthew the tax collector. And I've mentioned this before. Matthew, the same guy that wrote the Gospel of Matthew, was a tax collector. And you were considered a dishonest sinner in the first century to be a tax collector, because what they did was they collected taxes for the Roman Empire. But what they would often do is charge an inflated amount of taxes, and they would keep the extra money, or they would embezzle some of your money. And this was common knowledge, but you couldn't do anything to them because they were under the guise of the Roman Empire. So for Jesus to ask Matthew to be one of his disciples is completely an abomination. You know, I don't really know what to liken that to in the 21st century without necessarily being wrong, but for Jesus to choose Matthew to be a disciple is outrageous. And the fact that he does it proves that Jesus doesn't judge. And there's a huge misconception in the church. We feel like we have to call everybody shots. And I've been so guilty of this, especially lately. But that's not our job. Our job is to love first and witness to and try to be Jesus for. That with it carries a lot of weight. And I'll talk about that more than likely in the next episode. So this was a short one. But basically that's what it's about. If we were practically with Jesus, what would we see? If we were practically with Jesus, what would we see? Because I think you can fit almost everything in the New Testament about Jesus into these three categories. He heals, he's more powerful than anything else, and he knows everything. That's what I think we could find about Jesus, practically speaking, with the naked eye, if we were there in the New Testament with Jesus. On the next episode, we're going to be basically putting all these pieces together and be talking about, in light of all this, in light of Jesus of history, in light of Jesus of prophecy, in light of Jesus of practicality, who is the spiritual Jesus? Who is Jesus that I should want to know, do know, don't know? Who is Jesus Christ of Nazareth? Who is Jesus Christ the Messiah? That's what we're going to be talking about, basically bringing all the pieces together and discussing who truly the Son of Man is. Your CHH song of the episode is Boat Life by Mission. Mission is a part of a group called Rock, Paper, Scissors Music Group. I know that sounds kind of corny, but they've not really put a lot of stuff out as a collective. They did at the beginning of their careers. They've all since gone different ways. A lot of them are fathers. A lot of them are doing different things. Mission is one guy who has really stuck to rap as his career. And Mission is a great artist. Boat Life is a great song. And that's on an album that's also really great. So I encourage you to check out his stuff. Boat Life by Mission. That's our CHH song of the episode. So with that, I end the episode. Thanks for tuning in. I will reimburse you for the brain cells. Of course, follow us on Twitter at Calf Christ. That's C-A-F-F Christ. Check out our website, calfchrist.com. It's spelled the same as my Twitter handle. Know Christ, reflect Christ. John 1:5, hate sin, love sinners. And remember, the battle? Ha! It's already won. 50 songs. Howdy.